Talking about the moisture release curves today, I've got a couple of them here. These are in the very, very dry end. The blue B sample is a sample of soil that has about 47% clay. The Royal is much lower clay, maybe 15% clay. When we do these curves, we tend to focus maybe mostly on the water potential axis, since that tends to be the one that's more difficult to measure. And for the water content, we may think about and be a little bit comfortable with the idea that we put that sample in an oven at 105 degrees, and that, of course, has boiled off all of the water, and so there wouldn't be any more water in the sample. The sample would be bone dry. But if we think about that a little bit more, we realize that that can't be true, that at equilibrium, the sample in vapor pressure, the sample in the oven has to be the same as the vapor pressure of the surrounding air. If we assume that the oven is well ventilated, then so that we can take the vapor pressure in the oven as being the same as the vapor pressure in the laboratory, then we could do some substitutions. The water activity of the sample multiplied by the saturation vapor pressure at sample temperature would equal the humidity of the air multiplied by the saturation vapor pressure of the air. And we rearrange that equation a little bit, and we come up with the sample water activity when the sample is dry is the humidity of the air multiplied by the ratio of the saturation vapor pressure at air temperature to the saturation vapor pressure at oven temperature. So if we assume that the laboratory is about 25 degrees C and that the oven's 105 degrees C, then the sample water activity when the sample is dry is 0.026 times the humidity of the air. So if we figure that maybe the laboratory air is something around 50% humidity, then we're saying that when the sample is dry, its water activity would be about 0.01. Well, we went through all of this calculation, and being aware of the fact that when we dry samples in an oven at 105 degrees, the high temperature causes oxidation of organic matter and volatilization of volatile components. And so we thought it would surely be nice if we could dry the sample in a way that it would fully dry, but that we wouldn't have to have the high temperature. Well, we did that. We created that 0.01 water activity in a chamber, evacuated chamber, and we expected the water content to be the water content that we would get in the oven, and it turns out that it's not. That the water content that we got was more like the water content you would get if you had dried the sample in an 80-degree oven, not a 105-degree oven. And so why did that not work? Was there something wrong with our mathematics? Well, thinking a little bit about that, we realized that when the temperature of the soil increases, its water potential increases, or its water activity. Here I plotted water activity as a function of temperature. Water activity is directly related to the exponential of the water potential, and so we could use either of those as a measure of the energy state of the water, and it'll be a little bit more convenient to do this in terms of water activity. But if we had plotted the water potential, it would have created a similar relationship. So when the temperature increases, the water is more loosely held, and so more of it comes out when we put it in the oven. The next thing we wanted to determine, though, one thing always leads to another in these project, but you wonder now how much of the water that comes out when we put a sample in a 105-degree oven is because of this loosening effect of the water, and how much that comes out is due to the increase in vapor pressure difference that results from the oven being at a higher temperature than the laboratory. And so to try to answer that question, we made a pretty simple apparatus. The one on the left shows the apparatus open. There's a humidity sensor, humidity temperature sensor at this point. It's a sensor that'll go up to 125 degrees C, so we could go to a pretty high temperature with this. There's an O-ring that seals this, so when the sample chamber's together, we can make measurements in a constant temperature chamber that will go to fairly high temperatures. Now, show here a form of the Clausius-Clapeyron equation. The equation says that if we plot the logarithm of the water activity versus the reciprocal of the Kelvin temperature, we should get a straight line. And so I've plotted the results that we got from a set of these measurements. The lowest set of lines, the blue triangles, are for a sample that at room temperature was at 0.14 water activity, 14% relative humidity. The middle line was at 35% humidity at the start. The top line was at 72% humidity. And you can see that it fits that Clausius-Clapeyron relationship pretty well. But the slope changes pretty drastically as we change water potential or water activity. So now if we look at that Clausius-Clapeyron relationship and we compare it with the Kelvin equation, we can see that there are some pretty strong similarities between those two equations. So we might guess the Q in the Clausius-Clapeyron equation is the heat absorption. We might guess that the heat absorption and the water potential would be the same thing. But if you look at the graph on the right, these are data that we obtained for a couple of different soils there. The Salcombe soil was, I think, about 30% clay, and the Royal soil about 15%. You can see that those give, the two soil samples give similar results, but the slope of the line is not 1. It's something like 1.6. But certainly the heat absorption is related to the water potential of the sample. Now, going back again to a differential form of the Clausius-Clapeyron equation, we can substitute in the 1.6 times the water potential that we saw in the previous graph, and then we can substitute in the for water potential the log of the water activity, and integrate those, and we can come up with a relationship that shows us the water activity at any temperature as a function of the water activity at room temperature and the temperature that we're at. And so with that relationship, then, we're in a position to try to answer that question. How much of the water is coming out because we raise the temperature and increase the vapor pressure difference, which we could have done in other ways, we hadn't heated it up, and how much comes out because we increased the temperature itself. And so in the graph, we show the difference between the water content and the reference water content. Professor Grunewald pointed out in his comment on the last talk that water content is an arbitrary choice that we make. We say we dry at 105 degrees, but we could dry at other temperatures, other vapor pressure situations, and we would get different values for that reference. So the reference water content here is 105 degrees in the laboratory, between 40 and 50% humidity. And the dark blue line shows the relationship with temperature of that difference between the water content and the reference water content. So at laboratory temperature and humidity, the water content's coming out about 6%. This is for that the blue B, the 47% clay. That'd be what we'd call the air-dry water content. As we increase the temperature, the water content value that we would get decreases, and finally up at 105 degrees, while we're essentially at zero. The green line shows what that value would be if that loosening of the water didn't occur, if there weren't a temperature dependence of the water potential. And so you can see at 105 degrees that we'd get out about 1% less water than we get out with the temperature dependence of the water potential. We can look at that in a little bit different way, which I show in this graph. Here again on the y-axis, I plot the difference between the water content and the reference water content. And on the x-axis, I plot the laboratory humidity. And again, the blue line is the one that we would get with the temperature dependence of the water activity. And you can see that somewhere between 40 and 50% relative humidity, we get out what we would call our zero water content. If we were running these samples in a laboratory that was quite a bit drier than that, we could have maybe a 1% error in that. We can get out 1% more water than we do under the standard conditions. If the laboratory were more humid, or if our oven were not well ventilated so that moisture, water vapor built up in it, why we could get higher water contents than the standard. Now, since over that whole range, the temperature of the sample is the same, why we get just an offset of about 1% water between the temperature-dependent water potential and assuming that we didn't have that dependence. Show one more relationship. This is now directly trying to address that question that we had earlier on. What if we did want to dry the sample without heating it and get it to the same, get it to our reference water content without heating the sample up? Could we do that? We could. I've shown here where the arrow is, the 0.01 water activity that we considered to be our water activity at the reference state. And you can see that the sample, that a sample at room temperature would still have about 1% water left in it. A sample of flus B would have about 1% water left in it. What would we have to do to dry that on down to zero? Well, we'd have to drop its water activity to something like 0.001. Could we do that? Certainly we could. But it's not within the range of practical vacuum ovens that we'd need to go an order of magnitude farther in our vacuum, and the cost of that would be pretty high. So I think what the points that I'd like to make with this is that our zero water content can be a kind of a moving target, that we don't want to just assume that our water content is fine in a moisture release curve and just focus on the water potential part, that we can be off a ways on that. Now, high clay samples will be off farther than low clay ones will, and the example I've shown is pretty high clay samples. But still, we ought to pay attention to that part. The oven drying is effective because both because we increase the as we increase the temperature, we increase the vapor pressure difference, but we also loosen the water that's in the soil. A point that is kind of different from the other points, but an interesting one, is that heat absorption, at least from the measurements we made, turned out not to be the same as the water potential. There's a pretty old treatise, a kind of a classic in soil physics called The Thermodynamics of Soil Moisture, published by Adelson and Anderson in 1943, I think. If you read in that, it says that those two will be equal. I didn't find them to be equal. I hope somebody else will pick this up and do a better job of either measuring or analyzing and decide that I'm wrong. Thank you. Okay, it goes directly with the surface area, the specific surface of the sample. So if you had a sample that had half the specific surface, it would be 0.5%.
How would it be affected by organic
matter? Again, it goes as the specific surface. So organic matter tends to have a pretty high specific surface, so it would influence it in that same way.